location where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Mystical London. Hi, it's March 2014, and I'm with Toy Newton and Wayne John of The Information, and we're going to talk to Toy about his new book, London's Mystical Legacy. A lot of us in Brighton maybe commute up to London and we think of it as a fairly straightforward place, but Toyne, you've got a different angle on London.
Yes, let me tell you how this project first came about. I was approached some years ago by a friend and colleague of mine, John Tapsell, who'd been working around the sort of similar areas in archival research that I've been working on, and he came to me with the idea of this project to do an alternative, or rather a forbidden history, on London. Now, originally, this was going to be things like hauntings at tube stations, Spring Hill Jack, some of the more well-known legends. But once I started looking into it, I found that there was stuff which was much deeper. There was a much deeper aspect, hidden depths to this whole thing that needed to be explored. And John also found, from his viewpoint, he was also able to come at things from a slightly different angle. And so we were able to concur on this, two heads are better than one on this, because it developed into quite a large project. It took us 5 years to write from start to completion, and to that includes publication as well.
Yeah, and you got quite an unusual cover. Could you describe the imagery on the cover?
The idea I had was to, one of the dragons that you see around London, and I chose the one that's at the entrance to Temple Bar. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought it would be a good idea if it was sort of rearing up over St Paul's Cathedral. There's a very a good reason why St Paul's Cathedral was chosen as a monument as opposed to anywhere else, because that is the original site of the Temple of Diana. Now, as you know, Princess Diana and Prince Charles were married there. That broke with tradition, because tradition, all the royal weddings have always taken place at Westminster Abbey. And so this does kind of lead us on into the fact that some aspects of the gentry are aware of this pagan heritage, which most people aren't. So Diana was actually married at the Temple of Diana in London, and unfortunately she met her death at the Temple of Diana, or just above it, in the French tunnel, whose name escapes me at the moment. Yeah, that was it, yeah. Pont-Alma, I can never pronounce it.
No.
But these were both temples of Diana, one in London and one for the French Merovingian kings in Paris. And this was, I think, highly unusual. So we've featured St Paul's Cathedral for that reason, and also because it formed an integral part of Wren's research, and of course he built it along with his architect Nicholas Hawksmoor, who covered other areas in the reconstruction of London at the sort of as the New Jerusalem. But that is one of the main pagan sites of where London's original founder Brutus laid the first Temple of Diana. Now, there's a lot of controversy about Brutus, about this whole Trojan heritage, whether this is true or not. And again, we go into this in the book, and we've come at it from a different angle, which I think goes a long way to proving that there's a lot more behind the history of London than just the Romans. Yes, the Romans did develop things, but there was already a settlement there, and they weren't barbarians. They were people who were aware of alignments, and there were Druids there as well. Druids originally occupied the site where Parliament now is at Thorney Island. There was a Druidic circle there. So the first laws were actually enacted there long before our current MPs conducted in the sort of argy-bargy that we are seeing at the moment. In fact, the laws were probably passed a lot more easily then and without too much squabble than they are now. So lots of these things have a bearing on what's happening now, but people just aren't aware of it. Also in the book, we look at some of the most controversial aspects of London sort of mystical history, and some of that surrounds the what we call the Windsor Royal Coven. Now, this doesn't actually appertain to the royal family, it appertains to St George's Chapel in Windsor, which is the venue for the Order of the Garter, which ceremonies, which may appear to some as some sort of rather antiquated sort of stuff which is harmless, but in fact it has very pagan origins, because the whole of St George's Chapel, Windsor, where this ceremony is, takes place behind closed doors, where it takes place, is based on female genitalia, allegedly of the Virgin Mary. But of course, as any pagan knows, that imagery goes back to the pagan goddess. It is the imagery of the goddess, and it goes right back long before Christian times. And again, one has to wonder how much the gentry are aware of this connection. So they are. Once you start looking into these aspects, you find certain links which pose a lot of questions, which we try to answer in the book.
You've also got in the background there the sky, which is blue at first glance, but we look at it and we see it's actually a circular zodiac, is that?
Yes. There's an interesting link here to some of the imagery opposite St Paul's Cathedral. There's a house, a building, financial building called Bracken House, that contains a circular black sun wheel, which with Winston Churchill's.
You've seen that. I didn't know it was Winston Churchill's face.
Which is Winston Churchill's face, and that is right opposite St Paul's Cathedral, opposite this, where this Temple of Diana used to be. So that in itself is possibly a significant location, rather than just a sort of art type sculpture. There may be a lot more in it than just that.
Yeah, I have walked around the city of London. I think, Wayne, you've done that as well, haven't you? Looked at some of the symbols. I know it comes up in conspiracy books sometimes.
Yes, sure.
At a more superficial level than maybe you're talking about. Mm. But I suppose that is the oldest part of London, really, in terms of its development, would you say?
Yes, I mean, there are many other aspects to London. I mean, as I say, we could talk on it all night. We could have done actually three books or so on it, because there's so much to it. What we've tried to do in this book is to feature some of that, but also bring it up to date more with John Dee and some of the other things that have been going on as well. There is a slightly more obscure link, but nonetheless a pertinent one, with one of the members of the royal family, Earl Mountbatten, whose secretary was Dolores Hall and chauffeur, and she's better known as Madeleine Montalban, the great tarot reader, who had a column in Prediction magazine which ran for many, many years. And she was involved with the infamous spell to repel Hitler, which was conducted in the New Forest by the members of the of one of the original witchcraft covens. They ran as a theatre company, which Gerald Gardner was involved with. But this was the Mason family.
Right.
John was able to, my colleague, my co-author, was able to interview one of the last links, who worked as a lens polisher, or the lens maker, rather, I should say, with the four Ernie Mason. This chap's now dead. But he confirmed that Dolores Hall was a new old Ernie Mason, and there was a black Rolls Royce that used to come with a royal crest on it. And the inference was, well, he didn't actually say who came in to see Ernie Mason, the inference was that Mountbatten had come and met him on a couple of occasions and may well have been involved in this spell to repel Hitler, which went on for several, I think it went on for a couple of days. We've got all the details of it in the book. It's John's research. He conducted the interviews.
And did they have any success with the spell, or did they feel...
Well, there was a very strange point where Hitler seemed to lose his marbles a bit afterwards and decided to go into Russia instead of invading England. So from that point of view, to put it bluntly, it might have worked. I mean,
you can't prove...
Dion Fortune.
Yeah, well, yes, because she was one of the original members of the Golden Dawn, was she not? I think she was involved with them as well. She may have been involved with this, I'm not sure, actually. Who the we've got the leading players. I don't think she's actually mentioned
she did
in that.
Quite a book, The Mystical Battle of Britain.
Yes, yes, yeah. This was some... I think, actually, she may have fictionalised some aspects of it. I don't know whether, I don't think she was directly involved. I think this was purely was the Mason family and the Crotona Fellowship, as it was called. That was the name of the travelling theatre players, which contained the members of the hereditary witches.
It was like a cover, having them as a theatre.
Yes, exactly. These were hereditary witches. They were to trace their roots right back, and this was the last to be hereditary witches. Right. And they all died out now.
Right. So you looked into John Dee as well?
We looked into John Dee. He was very into this whole question of the Brutus bloodline, and he felt that both he and Queen Elizabeth, he claimed that they were part of this bloodline, and this gave them this kind of divine right to rule, so to speak. And he was very into expanding the British Empire through the whole naval thing as well. And of course, he painted the 007 cipher, which was used by Ian Fleming for James Bond, but that originally goes back to John Dee and his creation of the intelligence and services, such as it was in those days. So, I mean, he and Francis Bacon are both very significant and important people. They were both around at the same time. I think they've met each other once or twice. They were both involved in the Rosicrucians. And, of course, a lot of Bacon's theories helped to found America and the USA. A lot of people over there, historians, feel that their true founder is Francis Bacon, with his ideas and ideals. So these are two very important characters who were both around at the same time in
is
history.
That the book, The New Atlantis?
Yes, that's one of them. Yes, indeed, that's the book that that he wrote, I believe.
So do you feel you've got a very different general feeling of London now after you've done that?
Yes, I think so. One looks, and if you have to sort of cut away the veneer and that, and then if you start looking at all the sort of alignments, and of course London's lost rivers are another thing, because the Druids were very keen on water. They were very aware that water, flowing water, was an energy source. Mm-hmm. And if you get a map, of which we've included in the book, of London's lost rivers, you'll see all the amount of water, flowing water, and how it all interconnects. It's like a vein, it's like a separate artery, which all combines together. And so there was at that time a lot of natural energy coming from underneath there, which the Druids would have been aware of and would be sensitive of, but only from a practical point of view, but a possible spiritual viewpoint as well, because of that they would have sensed the energies, like water diviners can still sense the energies.
Yeah. And that, yeah, so there's more underground than just tube trains.
Yes, there is. Yes, definitely. It's a question of, as I say, plotting it and finding it.
Yeah.
And there are also alignments that have been worked out through mounds as well, which we also, I can't go into the detail but they're also in the back of the book and in the appendices.
Yeah, excellent.
Along with more practical things like the City of London offices, the officers and that. And there's some ritualistic stuff.
Could you say something about, is it true that the square mile is totally sovereign, like the Vatican,
is that true?
The Queen has to get permission to actually go in.
Yes,
the,
I should have mentioned
square mile the city.
Yeah, I should have mentioned this before. Yeah, the whole thing that underpins the book, in a sense, is the crown, and the crown in this case is not just the sovereign crown; it is the City of London Corporation, which consists of a committee of people that run the affairs of the Crown in the Crown's name, but they are a committee of people, and they team up with the Crown agents and who administer foreign lands and various other things, and they are extremely powerful from that viewpoint, because they own a lot of land that is owned in the Queen's name abroad, which is administered by the Crown, a lot of Canada, Australia, and in the USA. And if one takes into account this, as well as where some of the names in the London streets come, the City of London streets, see, the City of London is completely different. It has its own police force and it has its own government. There are more Freemasonic lodges in the City of London than anywhere. Lombard Street, for sake of example, takes its name from a play from that place in Venice, in the Italian region, where there used to be a group of very early Masons called the Comagene Masters, who all wore black. And they devised a system in Lombardy, a three-tier system of serfs and of, sort of leaders and elites and middle people. They had this going about all Middle Ages time, about 1,000 years or so. It's one of the earliest examples of a sort of tiered system masons, workers, of course, obviously they were constructing and building then. And that name, Lombardy, was then brought into Lombard. That's where Lombard Street gets
its name.
So
we say
from
these streets and we see them in the 80s London and we take it for granted and we don't think about
where they came from.
It.
No,
yeah,
that's just one example.
Okay, you know. Well, where can we get this book?
You can get this book, it's published by Lulu.com.
Yeah.
You can get copies from Watkins Bookshops in London, Treadwell's and Atlantis. And if you, we are just getting together a new website, which by the time this goes out should be ready. That is called mysticallondon.com.
Okay, well, we'll put a link on to either Lulu or mysticallondon.com. And thanks, Toyn, for talking to me. And Wayne.
Thank
you.
Okay, thanks very much.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.